doing a good work there, and just God blesses us. As I grow older, I'm thankful that I could be used and that I could be useful, and thankful to be with you this week. And this morning is a really important lesson. Sometimes people say, well, as Christians, we just stay with the positive. Well, I think everything God says is positive in the sense that it's good for us. But we need to see danger. We need to see what evil is. And we need to understand the game plan of Satan. We talked last night about men being men and learning to fight. One thing, and you go into battle, you need to know the battlefields. You need to understand how Satan works. And God just tells us in the fruit of the Spirit and the works of the flesh how Satan works. James 3 talks about how Satan works, the wisdom of Satan, what you end up when you get caught up in the wisdom of Satan. I love the song, Lynn. God will lead you to light. You will be honest, open, optimistic. Your relationships in Christ will grow. Satan will lead you into darkness. And you'll find anger, bitterness, pride, dishonesty, and separation. As we mentioned at the very beginning lesson, that God is a God of relationships. And we need to be wise of who we open our hearts to and those that we seek to associate with. What I'm going to talk with you about this morning, I'm giving you one form of this lesson, I like to talk about this a lot, is what I believe is one of the greatest dangers to our young people. That almost without exception, some form of what I've talked about this morning has been the number one killer of Christians. Where bitterness and anger and pride is planted. And so I want to talk with you about this ahead of time. I know when I was in Auburn, I tried to do this with the students, what does truth look like? If I protect my heart, what does that look like? So we'll see how well we can do this morning. I could go on for many lessons on this one, but we're just doing one. I remember as a young Christian reading what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount about false teachers. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. Do you not know them by their fruits? Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, and a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruit you shall know them. I know brethren have debated, where do you call someone a false teacher? When do you call somebody a false prophet? And we could talk about that particular terminology. But I can show you clearly this morning the kind of heart that the false teacher implants in his followers. And that can be clearly seen. And I hope by the time we finish this, you'll understand more about this. We're kind of coming back to it. But we're not talking this morning about somebody who is mistaken about doctrine and that's it. We're not talking about somebody who is struggling with a position and has a false position and he's trying to determine what is right and wrong. What I want to talk to you about this morning is a certain kind of deceiver. One who has an agenda. One who really, his heart is not open to God. It's more about something else, themselves and getting a following. Over the years, I've better seen this. Luke chapter 12, here, let's look at it this way. Let's look at the deceivers in Jesus' day. You had different groups. The Pharisees are mentioned here. He says, in the meantime, when a numeral multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And he could have listed all of the doctrines they taught, and he does that in Matthew 15 and Matthew 22. But notice here, he's talking about a kind of heart that gets duplicated. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark, you will be heard in the light, and what you have spoken in the ear in the inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. Hypocrisy. Someone who appears one way, but inwardly they are another. And what you're going to see, and you see this consistently, as you look at the work of Satan, Satan goes for darkness. Could I just go ahead and tell you up front, when somebody says they still want to teach you something and talk to you about something, and don't tell anybody. A congregation I served as a shepherd, and somebody would go in there, don't tell the elders. And you know what a good flock does? They immediately go tell the elders, you know. Hey, what you're going to see, when you begin to see people that are not serving God, they want to whisper and isolate you and tell you things. And you know what you're going to end up with? This. You're going to end up with separation, division, bitterness, anger, hypocrisy, darkness. The Pharisees were one he told them to be aware of. You know another group he told them to be aware of? He talked about the leaven of Herod. There are two leavens today that's affecting our culture. One would be within a group within the church that are planning some of the things we're going to talk about in a moment, trying to destabilize, gather a following. And the second is political. And I'm beginning to see not only brethren being pulled away from the standpoint of somebody within the church doctrinally, but I'm seeing the poisonous politics, which is the same thing. Will you write off your brethren? You're bitter toward them and you just separate them. These are two mighty forces working today and they're affecting brethren. They've affected my family. They've affected others. It is real. Let's talk about how to identify it and how to prepare for it. Hypocrisy. Jesus in Matthew 23 says, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. For you're like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and uncleanness. Even so, you outwardly appear to be righteous to men, but inside you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Now, brethren, let me tell you one thing I want to be sure you understand. Don't be merciful to your brethren. Assume the best. I'm not here trying to make you so afraid of brothers and worried, you know, but I'm saying they're... I don't want to assume somebody's a hypocrite. Before I draw that conclusion, there's a path to go down. I'm going to assume people have a good heart until the evidence is that they're not. Here, we need to understand here, there's a danger. And hypocrites are very hard to pull out sometimes. You don't always know, but there's a way to know. And so, we want to be careful as we apply this material, but there are things we can know. In Acts 20, here's where I'm going. There's different kinds of deceivers, by the way. I'm dealing with one type of deceiver here, the one that does the most damage when they're trying to gather a following. But in Acts 20 and verse 29 is where I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves, men will rise up, speaking perverse things, to draw away the disciples after themselves. Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years I did not cease to warn everyone night and day with tears. As I've watched people that I've loved be pulled into movements and they cut me off, wouldn't have a word to do with me even though I never had any difficult relationships with them. When I see the fruit of this, I try to warn about it carefully. And some people say, well, Larry, you've become a watchdog. Why do you know about these things? Why do you know about these movements? Well, I'll tell you why I know about them, because they've affected people I love and they've influenced people I love. And Satan would love for you. You know what he likes to do? He talks about good evil and evil good. And here you're trying to just clearly see a danger and he wants to intimidate you by labels and names. Paul warned for every day for 3 years, night and day, with tears about this danger. I don't want you to go out of this assembly scared to death. Oh, this is going to happen. No, no. I want you to be aware of how to identify it. We have to learn how to watch. And that's the function of elders. Good watchmen can negate this stuff, and it never have much of an effect on a congregation. But we've got to know what to look for. Back in 2014, you draw a 100-mile radius around Auburn, where I was at, and you probably had 30% of the congregations were troubled or divided by some influences that came here to the state of Alabama. I'm not going to try to give you all the details about that here, but I'm telling you, these things happen. They tend to happen every 20 years or something like that. You see, the Grace Unity movement back in the 70s and 80s, there seems to always be some movement along these lines. And while the doctrinal system that is put forth may change, the spirit of the teachers and what they produce in the disciples are the same. And so let's talk about that. First off, I'm going to talk a little bit about the kind of deceiver that's seeking a following. One of the men that did a lot of damage was a man that I worked with very closely. Encouraged him to preach, worked with him. He told me if it hadn't been for me, he wouldn't have been preaching. And I tried to help him with certain congregations and things. And we were very close, but he got pulled into this and now wouldn't give me the time of day. And I could see people, sometimes you're tempted to want people, we're all tempted to have a good relationship with others. We want people to think well of us, but we can become a mere selfish person. We can give in to temptation, and now we really want the reputation regardless of truth. Let's look at Psalms 36, where we talk about what I'd call a narcissist today in today's language. We're talking about the person that wants a following. An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes, for he flatters himself in his own eyes. When he finds out his iniquity and when he hates, the words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. He devises wickedness on his bed. He sits himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil. There are sometimes men, we look at them, though, they're godly men. They're wonderful men. And some men have lost the control of their hearts. And when they do that and they start trying to draw disciples after themselves, they're going to be filled with deceit and will develop that element. You know, there's sometimes people talk about narcissism, and I talk about narcissism as selfishness, and you could be tempted toward this and not give into it, but the person sometimes that's trying to have a following, some people talk about this, that they have a grandiose sense of self-importance. It's all about them. They live in a fantasy world that supports their delusion of grandeur. They need constant praise and admiration. You're going to find the person that is the deceiver. They're constantly looking at their reputation. They're constantly concerned about what people think about them. They have a sense of entitlement. They exploit others without guilt or shame. They frequently demean, intimidate, bully, or belittles others. This is one type of character. There's others that can deceive. But the key thing is they give in to deceit. They're more concerned about appearance, outward appearance. And they oftentimes don't see themselves. Proverbs 26 and verse 20. One of the things that I've seen as one of the number one tools of these kind of deceivers is bitterness. I'm going to talk about that in depth on Wednesday night. But the person that is very successful at drawing disciples after themselves, they want to get you mad. You may be hurt, and there may be something that has happened to you. Brethren may have hurt you, and they want to hear about it. And they don't want to solve the problem. Matter of fact, they want to expand that. They want you to become more angry. They then want you to try to talk about, here are others in the church that didn't do anything about it. And the next thing you know, they want you to write off the church altogether. Listen to me carefully. This is one of the biggest tools that I see that hypocrites do in the background. They want you angry, and then they don't want you fixing anything. When you become angry and you live in anger, you become one of the most easily exploited people that you could be. Those that are easily angered are easily manipulated. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And when there is no tale-bearer, strife ceases. As a charcoal to burning coals, as wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a tale-bearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down to the innermost body. Fervent lips with a wicked heart act like earthen well covered with silver dross. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up the steep within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him. For there are seven abominations in his heart. But his hatred is covered by deceit. His wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it rolled back on him. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. You may say, well, Larry, really, these people like this? By their fruits you shall know them. And that's one of the things that just breaks my heart. When I see people caught into this, they begin living in the land of what I call the land of throwaway people. It's not just a doctrinal system they get caught up in. Their heart becomes darkened. They write off people that are good people. They would love to talk to them, but they want to cut them off. That is one of the major goals of false teachers. They want to cut you off from people who could help you, and through flattery and through other things, they want to draw you to themselves and establish a sense of pride. Oh, we know. We're wise. Look at these legalistic brethren. Look at all these people that have been so oppressive. Have you seen that? Our young are very susceptible to it. How can we help ourselves dealing with these kind of men? They appear as sheep, but they are ravenous wolves. And so that's important. The word ravenous means vicious, ravenous, destructive, like a wild animal. And there's the idea of bitterness. You know one thing, when I tried to work in Auburn with young people, and a lot of your children came to Auburn, one of the things I tried to hammer on them, folks, let me tell you what truth looks like. Truth is open. Truth is honest. If you have an issue, you want to go with somebody and talk to them. If you think you've found some doctrinal system that disagrees with what I teach or what brethren teach, that's okay. Be willing to talk about it. But I've emphasized this, I hammered this in so many ways that I could. But if somehow you think all the churches of Christ, you make these broad conclusions about churches of Christ, and you're going to go to your house church or you're going to go to some little group here in Athens, and then you're just not going to talk with anyone, I don't think that's truth. I don't think that's of God. In John 3:19-21, those who love the truth come to the light. Those, as Jesus said, those things are not going to be done privately. You're going to let them be done openly. You don't write people off and throw them away. But that is one of the main characteristics of what happens with this deceiver. Jude 16, verse 16, these are grumblers, complainers, walking according to their own lust, when their great mouth, they mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage. But you, beloved, remember the words which are spoken by the apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ. How they told you that there would be mockers. And oh, that word mocking, that is a classic one here. Mockers in the last day who would walk according to their own ungodly lust. They are sensuous persons who cause divisions, not having the Spirit. You know what's characteristic? And I say this, the brethren that went down this path, some I knew, I loved personally, and it breaks my heart to see when they get in this spirit, they'll go, if they have a social media account, they never come out telling you what they believe, but they constantly are ridiculing brethren and putting brethren in a bad light. You look at them and you read it and you can tell that there is some kind of unresolved anger here, but they recruit people to think that way. The fruit of what they are is terrible. Let's give you an example with Absalom. Absalom is a classic example of the narcissistic deceiver. Here, Absalom, by the way, David made terrible mistakes with Absalom. There are a lot of things he did. I have a whole lesson on Absalom and where Absalom was angry because his dad didn't take care of issues within his home he should have, and he never took a firm stand with Absalom, and so Absalom became a mess. But Absalom wanted to influence others, and he was successful at it. It is after this it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. So it was whenever anyone had a lawsuit, came to him for a decision, that Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you." Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me. Then I would give him justice." And so it was, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him, and you know the rest of the account. One of the things that a deceiver will do, they will take your hurt and they want to irrigate it. They want to water it. They want to take your hurt, whether it's justified or not justified, and then turn you against brethren. He was turning people against his dad. You know, it's easy to fight a battle when you don't have to go into the foxhole. It's easy to fight the battle when you're at a distance. And you know what? I could see him talking to one side of the court of this trial and then the other later. And he says, "Oh, you're right. You know, you could preach it round or flat as long as you don't have to deal with accountability." Be careful, people. When people broadly label churches of Christ in some way, when they make these broad accusations, I see young people talking about this. They make broad accusations about churches of Christ, and they've probably been only 3 or 4 churches or a small area of churches in their lifetime. They couldn't possibly know that. But that's what anger does. That's what pride does. And you know the rest of the story. He won over Israel. And God's had him struck down. One of the things that I see is that these folks want to create wedges. Look at Galatians 4. Here were those that were trying to teach that we had to keep the law and be circumcised. And one of the problems these teachers had, first off, they didn't have the truth. Secondly, there was the Apostle Paul, and the Apostle Paul could easily teach them right and wrong. And so what the hypocritical deceiver does, he wants to cut you off from those that could help you. Remember that. This is critical to understand this. Paul starts off in verse 16, "Have I therefore become your enemy? Because I tell you the truth. They zealously court you, but for no good. Yes, they want to exclude you that you may be zealous for them." This right here is how deceivers work. Yvette grew up in Montgomery, and there was a congregation there that I always loved brethren there, great relationship. And back in the 90s, they had a division. And there was a group of people that went off and started what they called the Church on the Hill. I didn't know what had happened. I love those people. But when I came back in the area, next thing you know, I found out people were angry with me. They wouldn't give me the time of day. And I'm kind of like, what did I do? What did I do? I didn't do anything. I found out this spirit had been implanted. Brethren, don't let that happen to you. One more time, if you have the truth, you'll talk with others. Don't write off people because of somebody else's anger. Here's a verse not in the outline, but this is one that means a lot to me. Another way of looking at this, 1 John 2:9. "He who says he is in the light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But he who hates his brother is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. A false teacher that is capable, if they get you filled with anger, he can lead you anywhere he wants to take you over time. And I've seen that over and over again. Congregation I preached after 7 years in Birmingham had something similar here to happen. They formed this church in Birmingham. And when you have a church formed like this, and if it is on bitterness, anger, and learned dishonesty, it's not going to last. Sometimes you see that with house church movements in this area. You know what typically when somebody separates out of anger and bitterness like this, when they go into whatever they go to, they don't last longer than 2 years or less. And they end up going into some denominational body, or many of them quit attending altogether. You cannot build on the works of the flesh. You cannot build on angerness and bitterness, deceit. You can't do it. You feel good when you do this. These brethren have been terrible, but they pull you away from God. And you can't see anymore. What are some characteristics? But let me mention one other thing. Brethren, the internet, social media. You may say, well, Larry, we're going to protect my children. We're not going to have that come into a congregation. A good eldership can deal with that very effectively. But people can get into your children's life through social media. And these guys, when they get on social media, they appear to be the sweetest, most kind. I'm going to tell you, they will talk about the grace of God. And I love the grace of God. I know what the grace of God looks like. But what you begin to see, and that's what I saw, again, years ago when I knew the congregation that had once been that was going a bad direction. But the man that was teaching, you could never pin him down on what he believed. There was one brother in this area where he held a meeting. He said, well, what do you do when the lessons that this fellow teaches, they always leave you uneasy? Like there's something unspoken, but you can't put your finger on it. What happens with deceivers, they will speak publicly in a way where you can't quite pin them down on what they believe. But if they could draw the certain kind of disciple to them privately, then they'll tell you that person what they believe. If they feel like they can be manipulated and controlled. And one of the ways I learned about where some of these guys were going, they took people under their influence that I baptized into Christ. And that I loved. And they hadn't quite learned the deception process very well. And they had come out on social media and plainly state exactly where they were going. I said, that's by Rosetta Stone. And knowing the direction of this stuff, the seeing their disciples, what they do. Brethren, I don't want you to be suspicious of everybody. Understand this. I'm talking about a particular kind of deceiver. But I hurt for you. If one of your loved ones gets caught up in this because it's hard to get out of. It's not just bitterness. It's also relationships that want to enforce that bitterness. They do not want to come to the light. They do not want to solve problems. You rarely can get them to debate you doctrinally. They're always misunderstood. You know why they love being misunderstood? They love to be a martyr. And then they'll turn to their disciples. Look at this. Larry's persecuting me. He's asking me a question. And you know, they're very hard to deal with. Capable deceivers constantly want to get bitterness in their followers. Flattery is used. They will look at you and they think you know something. They're going to give words to you that you think they believe like you do. But they're deceptive in that. In Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 3, it says, and like a bow, they have bent their tongues for lies. They are not valiant for the truth on the earth, for they proceed from evil to evil, and they do not know me, says the Lord. Everyone take heed to his neighbor, and do not trust his brother, for every brother will utterly supplant, and every neighbor will walk with slanderers. Jeremiah 9:8, their tongue is an arrow that shoots out. It speaks deceit. One speaks peacefully to his neighbor with his mouth, but in his heart he lies in wait. Shall I not punish them for these things, says the Lord? Shall I not avenge myself on such a nation as this? Years ago, I saw an article that a good friend of mine wrote. He called about talking in code. Brethren, I wish I didn't have to say this. But when somebody is a true deceiver, they will be a standing audience like this, and one group understands the code language and what he means, and another group hears the code and they think he believes something else. 1 Peter 2:1. But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who brought them and bringing on themselves swift destructions. Now look at verse 2. Remember this. I remember hearing Irvin Lee years ago with great emphasis talking about this verse. I'll never forget it. And he repeated it many times in his sermon. And many will follow their destructive ways. Many! Because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. I better understand that now. It breaks my heart. By covetousness, they will exploit you with deceptive words. You know when how I get these guys mad at me on social media? I'm not trying to get them mad at me, because they're trying to hide what they believe. And I realize I can't accuse them, because I'm hoping they don't believe where I think they're going. But you know what I like to do on social media? I like to ask questions. That's it. I don't enter much of discussion with them, but I ask questions for clarity. Good luck on trying to get these guys to specifically tell you what they believe. There's one young man that I worked closely with, loved him, spent a lot of time with him. He ended up dividing a church in Georgia, went to Arizona, became Presbyterian, so I think you may know who I'm talking about. He's going to be holding debate in this area as a Presbyterian later this year. But I can remember as he was drifting, I was trying to tell brethren there in Georgia, I think he's going this direction. I'm very concerned. I don't think he believes that baptism is necessary for salvation, that it is essential for salvation, that it's part of the step of being forgiven. I couldn't quite say for sure that here is going. I was pretty confident of it. And so this brother said, well, you need to go ask him. And he came back to me, you've misrepresented my brother. He believes that. And you know what had happened? He had given him language that was so obscure that he hid what he believed. Now, he later came out on that. But you see, that's the kind of thing. And what happens, even though this person holds this position, he hides it, and guess what? He now is a martyr. Larry was mistreating him. And I was basically saying, you need to ask him about his beliefs. I'm not sure. That's how they work. And what they do, once they get you in a relationship and you think, this is the greatest person on earth, they're kind to me, they flatter me, oh, he's wonderful, he talks about the grace of God, he's a wonderful guy, look at all these bad people in the church, oh, they're persecuting him. 2 Peter 2:18, for when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they allure through the lust of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error, while they promise them liberty. They themselves are slaves of corruption, for whom a person is overcome, by him also he's brought into bondage. Again, if you build on pride, if you build on bitterness, it doesn't just stop there. Once they separate from brethren, guess what? Their group generally disintegrates. And you end up finding people get caught up in that. It doesn't just affect them in their relationship to the church. It affects them in all relationships. Bitterness, anger, darkness, irrationality, throwing away people is not good for you in any sense, spiritually or even in your relationships. And you begin to see tragedies that follow when that kind of spirit is imparted. I'm going to give you a little test. In the few minutes we've got here, I want to show you a couple. Well, maybe anyway, G9. Here's what I try to tell young people, folks: be careful in making charges about another. I've been very careful when I look at somebody. I think they may be going in a bad direction. I'm always going to assume the best. I'm going to try to talk to them. But when the disciples get in there, they'll just talk about churches broadly. And I go, you can't do that as a Christian. You cannot broadly, as a category, write off, brethren. You need to treat others as you'd want them to treat you. You need to be specific about the problems. You need to be specific about the people that have done this. Don't put everybody in that category. In Jude 9 it says, but Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil, when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation. This is Satan. And the archangel wouldn't even bring a reviling accusation against Satan. Be careful how you speak of your brethren. Be careful how you treat your brethren. Light, honesty, taking time to talk with others. We've already talked about Galatians 4. So now, what I want to do real quickly here, just give you an example, and again, of how somebody can be very deceptive in their language. When people say, churches of Christ are legalistic, you know when sometimes I like to say, give me an example. When they say, churches of Christ have done this, or can you give me an example? Can you be specific? These people that recruit others are very generic. You rarely can get them to be distinctive on any doctrine. They rarely will cooperate with you. But let me give you an example. Here is, I want to go ahead and go to something. I'll come back here to these verses. But here is a quote that was... that I saw years ago that broke my heart. Now notice, you read this quote, you can take a couple of ways. When you read this, you're not sure where the person is going. But let me give you this example. I believe we should go back to the Bible free of any shackles of doctrinal issues of churches of Christ. And just read it as a story, which is what it is. Not seeking to find justification or argumentation over some preconceived notion about righteousness, holiness, patterns, etc. But reading it as a Christological document, see the art of reading Scripture, I think we will be greatly enriched, and many of our rigid rules will become nuanced and refreshed, and we may even drop some rules. And we may actually add some depth of commitment to a call of discipleship. As we do that, as we begin to glean the true intent of this story and reinvestigate the real meanings of various contexts that have dominated us in our issues, we will have done ourselves a great favor. We will not be propositional Baconians, nor will we be relativist postmoderns, although to one degree or another, we will miss some points and probably lean in one or both directions at different times in specific instances, but we will be Bible storytellers. I remember looking at this and I'm going like, where's this going? Now, if it's about studying the Bible and really you continue to study and get in depth in the Scripture and then we make changes, that's wonderful. I agree with you, but that's not what this author had in mind. I want you to look real quickly at prejudicial language. Notice, the doctrinal issues of churches of Christ aren't just doctrinal issues. What kind of doctrinal issues are there? They're shackles. Look at that. You go later, and he says, we need to read the Bible as a story. That's great. What do you mean by that? If you get to the specificity of what it means to read the Bible as a story, N.T. Wright has influenced a lot of these men. And N.T. Wright was this guy's hero. And N.T. Wright says the Bible is going to be like a five-part Shakespeare play, of which we only have four parts. And what you do is you imagine yourself in your personal story by imagination what it would be like to fit into the Scriptures. In other words, the Scriptures doesn't give you specific rules, but you imagine yourself as... That's a bunch of gobbledygook, by the way. And it really is. But N.T. Wright can say what it says, that women should be limited in the assembly, that there's an order in headship. These guys will go, oh, that's cultural, and they just write it off. And it's, again, notice... us, we have preconceived notions. He mentioned patterns. Notice, we have rigid rules. And that actually, if we drop these rigid rules, we'll really be real disciples. But here was the key term for me. That word, propositional Baconian. I look at that and I'm going, what is that? I go, I like bacon. Yeah, is that what that is? But you go back and you look particularly at that time in discussion groups, I mean, Abilene Christian and others, people who, you know who propositional Baconians are? It's people who believe we need to have book, chapter, and verse for our practices and teaching. And if we don't have book, chapter, and verse or authority for our teachings, we need to reject it. When you go deeper into that, it is an absolute rejection of the authority of the Scriptures. I'll be talking about that Friday night, by the way. Let's conclude. I've gone, matter of fact, I'm gone a little bit right at the limit here, but let's look. I want to show you a couple of verses by the Lord. Here's what I contend for. Sometimes, none of these guys, by the way, I have never, ever yet got a single one of these guys to sit down with me and talk. I would be kind. I would love it. If you know somebody in this community that talk with me that believes some of these things, I'd love to talk to them. But sometimes when they say propositional Baconian that you need to have authority for what you act, if you don't have authority, you don't act. So you know what I would ask the person kindly? Was Jesus a propositional Baconian? Because I can go through the book of John and I show you exactly how Jesus said we should handle the words of God. In John 8:28, then Jesus said to them, when you lift up the Son of Man, then you'll know that I am He and that I do nothing of myself. But as my Father taught me, I speak these things. And He who sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone, for I always do those things that please Him. In other words, if you took a look at 1 Peter 4:11, this is the same concept. If anyone speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God. I hope I've been understood this morning. Understand how deceivers work. And I would say to my students, if you ever come to a position where you think you have to separate yourself from brethren and you believe it's truth, be willing not only to talk to others but try to convince them. Open the Scriptures. When people do that, we can't be pulled in to these other movements. Works of the flesh, fruit of the Spirit. Okay. It's been a challenging lesson this morning, but a very important one. We want to extend the invitation if you need to respond to the invitation of God, the invitation to the light, an invitation to have a clean heart, to serve Him. Would you come as we stand?